Hello, I'm Katie.
And I'm Leslie.
And we're all booked.
Welcome back to another episode of Sterling Municipal Library's podcast, where we talk to you about books we would like to recommend. And Katie is not with us this evening. She is working the reference desk and answering people's questions. But our special guest this evening is Kathy, and she is bringing the book Kindred. How about you tell us a little bit about it? Was it a required reading?
It was a required reading.
Okay. And what did you think of it? Did you enjoy it?
I found it very entertaining, but I also was frustrated at multiple points in the story.
What frustrated you about it?
Rufus's actions, his whole attitude, demeanor, and kind of just how stuck Donna was in, like, her situation as compared to her present time and, like, the antebellum southern time.
So how about, because I know this is a really complicated book, how about you go ahead and give us just an overall, like, general plot synopsis?
So Dana's celebrating her 26th birthday with her husband, Kevin, and at some point she gets dizzy and gets transported back into the past when Rufus is just a little boy and has to save him from drowning in a river. And from that point on, she's transported between her present time and the past during times when Rufus needs to call her because he feels like his life is threatened. She usually has to figure out how to go from one time period to another without getting harmed because the power doesn't really, like, talk to her or anything. It just happens, so she has to figure out the rules on her own, and she has to navigate between her present world and the antebellum South where slavery still exists.
Who is Rufus, and how does she figure out who he is the first time she's transported back?
She doesn't realize it's Rufus when she first meets him. She just remembers that she saved a red-haired boy. Throughout the story, he then introduces himself as Rufus at different points in his life, despite increasing in age while she still stays 26 throughout the whole novel.
Okay, so all of this happens in her 26th year, but
yes.
She keeps getting called back at multiple times.
Yes.
Now, what is it that connects her to Rufus? Because she's black and he's white, right?
Yes, okay. But I don't know if this was a spoiler, because it does play some points, and I think it showed up late in the middle. The connection between Donna and Rufus is that Rufus is her great-grandfather,
okay.
And he was the husband of Alice, I believe. And so he has, like, a blood relationship with
yes.
Donna.
Yeah, and I'm sure that's where the name Kindred also comes from. Like, so that part makes sense. Now, when I was looking, because I did a little bit of research before we started recording this, when I was looking at it, it looks like Dana's husband, Kevin, factors into the story some as well. Does he ever get transported with her?
He gets transported once in the story.
Okay. And then he is also white, is that correct?
Yes, he's white. Dana's black, Rufus is white, and the only other black characters are the slaves inside the story, or enslaved people.
Does Dana start telling Kevin what's happening?
She tells him the moment she gets transported back. So he's caught up, but he doesn't believe it until he's transported back.
Okay. How long is she out when she's transported? Like, does it just feel like time continues as normal in her current time period?
She doesn't get immediately transported back into her time. It's very delayed. Yeah, it's like, because it's not even, like, scientifically, like, you're gone for this many minutes, but you spend that many minutes in this time period. For her, it's kind of like 1 second. She's gone from her time period. She's gone for a couple days in the past.
Okay. Is she usually returning to the same place every time she's transported to the past?
She's returning to the same area, but not the same exact place that she had disappeared from.
Because it's different time points in Rufus's life, right?
Yes.
Okay. What is her first impression of Rufus? Because he's a little boy, right?
Yes, he's a little boy, and she had to do CPR on him, so there wasn't much of a
interaction.
Yeah.
she's
just resuscitating him. I think that's the word.
I just used it.
Okay. I believe the first impression when she actually reaches his life again and he talks to her, he was very demanding, and then he also said a slur during this point, but it was very normal for them in that time period. So first impression, they didn't really get off on a good foot because they were both just bickering back and forth.
Usually when you watch different time travel shows, they emphasize that when you go back in the past, you shouldn't change things because you might mess up the future. But it seems like in this particular book, she has to change whatever's happening in the past to kind of protect her future self.
Mm-hmm.
How does that shape the story?
Certain actions that she takes on basically is only to preserve her bloodline, and due to her feeling like she's obligated to do these certain things, she kind of traps herself in certain plot points in ways where she could have escaped or she could have ran off or something could have gone in a better direction if she didn't feel that type of obligation. So it kind of constrains
her. Can you give me, like, an example? It's okay if it's a little bit spoilery, because this book is complicated enough. I don't think it's going to ruin it for anyone.
To continue her bloodline, she saves Rufus one of the last times, even though she contemplated leaving him for dead, because technically it would have been better for everyone at that point because he had become a monster.
Yes, yeah. Okay. No, that is a really good point, and that makes it interesting to explore. Is she ever tempted to do something for somebody else in that timeline that's just kind of extra? Like, here, I see you're suffering. Let me help you this way.
She lets her great-grandmother, is a slave that was basically forced into bed with Rufus. She lets Alice take out her anger on herself so that she can kind of bear some type of responsibility, as she didn't really stop Rufus, as she couldn't really stop Rufus from forcing her great-grandmother into bed. And other times she would basically try to help slaves that were kind to her. I believe the head house slave, the one that, like, prepared meals, set up everything. I think her name started with an S, but I forgot.
It's okay. I don't have her name anywhere in here either, so.
She basically taught Dana certain chores, and Dana always respected for her after that.
Okay. So in the end, do you think Rufus was any better than his father?
There are multiple categories we can judge this off of. I believe that, in general, Rufus was more human to the enslaved people than his father was, because his father did view them as property, while Rufus actually, like, empathized with them to a certain extent, to the point where they actually lost respect for him as a leader. But due to his extreme obsession with his possessions, or, like, extreme obsession with people he loved, like, quote-unquote, he would do amazingly cruel things that probably rivaled his father in anger, because he did take after his father in certain things, like screaming at his mother and such.
Do you think that Dana was able to shape his outcome at all, like change his viewpoint, help him become better in any sense?
I believe that Dana, the way she spoke and the way she bickered and argued with him, did make him more tolerable than what he would have been if he was just left alone. I believe that because he had a soft spot for her, certain things she would say, she would be able to persuade him to actually be less of a good slave owner of the time.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I believe that her involvement in the story also, like, kind of festered another obsession, so.
Okay.
Yeah, it's not completely her fault. It's just that he's just a really, like, shitty person.
Yes, I very much got that impression, even from looking at the discussion questions. Why do you think that Rufus and some of the slaves accept Dana's just appearing out of thin air and disappearing so suddenly? Like, why are they just okay with that happening and not being like, hey, where'd you come from?
I think it's just because they've seen it at multiple points in their lives. Like, when Rufus's mother saw Dana for the first time when she had saved her drowning son, and then the second time when he was just a teenager, and then, like, a third or fourth or fifth time, you start believing, you start not being able to deny the truth, even though they didn't really. I believe that during that time too, there's probably, like, more folk tales and more things around like that, so not everyone was very, like, rejecting of the supernatural.
Yeah, no, that's a good answer. I don't remember. So we know that the time she's traveling back to is, like, the antebellum slave period. What is her actual time period that she's supposed to be in?
She's in 1970s, 1960s, something like that.
So she's coming back in, like, 70s attire and stuff, and that's not even weird to anybody.
It was the first time that Rufus saw her, and his mother saw Dana in men's trousers. They were.
Oh my gosh, I forgot how scandalous that would be.
Yes, they were so aghast. They were just so put off by that for some reason. Well, actually, no, because that was the time period.
Because that's scandalous, man.
I think she had to lie to another slave that was slightly suspicious of her for wearing men's trousers. She lied and said that her master couldn't afford to buy her a skirt or a dress.
Okay. What was Dana's place in Rufus's household? Because didn't she have to kind of slip into it sometimes whenever she traveled back?
Yes. She was more of just, like, a carer for his ailing mother, because at some point she's kind of weakening, or she just needs a caretaker for some sort of reason. And she takes on that duty at some point, but that's later on. At the beginning, I believe, she just worked as a house slave.
What was her attitude about it? How did she feel about it?
Her attitude was more of a, I'm trying to make a hole out of the corner I've been put in. it's very much I'm trying to invest in my future in case I have to be transported back. So she just kind of did chores and did certain things, but she would also have more liberty than a normal slave would.
Do you think that Kevin and Dana's marriage lasted after the book?
I've never thought of that. It should have. I mean, he didn't really become racist despite staying there for 5 years. At least.
Oh my gosh, they were there for 5 years.
He was there for 5 years. Okay. She got transported back without him by accident.
Oh, wow. Mm. Okay, so tell us about that time when they went back together.
Dana was starting to disappear. Kevin latched onto her. He got transported back into the past. They stuck it out for 2 months. Something happened, and Kevin couldn't get to her in time when she felt her life was threatened, I believe. It was by either Rufus's father or himself doing something that basically triggered her fight-or-flight reaction. Okay. She got transported back. Kevin missed her by, like, a few seconds. And in that time period, they had established themselves as teachers in the household.
Okay, interesting. And so then he was just stuck there for 5 years? Like, when she came back, how did that go?
Kevin actually wasn't at the plantation at the time that Dana came back. So she asked Rufus to send 3 letters. Rufus, due to his obsession and wanting her to stay there forever, he hid them. So I believe that... I forgot if Rufus's father was alive during this time or not, but I believe Rufus's father was the one that actually sent the letter because Rufus didn't honor his word and his father forced him to. So Kevin actually was not in the know-how for a bit of the segment before they would both eventually return to their time period. Okay. And around that time, there's the climax in the book.
So why do you think the author chose those two time periods specifically for Dana to travel between?
To contrast the experience of a black person of modern times versus a black person of antebellum times. And it's just kind of the psychology, because due to kind of like a more progressive like state of our society as of right now, we learn about atrocities in the past, but we aren't able to really identify with these people. So having someone from our time period, well, 70s, but like, you know, it feels like 2000s, go back into the past and explain what they've experienced, it makes people empathize easier.
Yeah. Was this your first book by Octavia Butler to read?
I think I read another book. It was the one where there was like a dystopian, like,
she's written so much. Like, a lot.
Yeah, I remember trying to search up one book from her, and I searched about Arthur, and it was just like scroll, scroll,
yeah,
scroll.
Yeah, no, she is incredibly prolific.
She wrote, oh, Parable of the Sour.
Okay, how do you think this one compared to the previous one that you read?
I think I was more entertained by Parable of the Sour because that person was more around my age.
Okay. Yeah, that's fair. Is there anything that you wanted to add about the book? And as far as high school's required reading goes, where would you put this on a scale? Like, if you were going to give it a 1 to 5 star rating, with 1 being, oh my gosh, like, this was the worst, I had to force myself to get through this, or 5 being, this was amazing, I forgot it was required, where would you put that one?
I think it'd be a good 4. Okay. I feel bad for not giving it a 5 out of 5, but...
No, it's okay, it's okay. I'd rather you be realistic, and, you know, the whole point of this is just so you review it and tell us how you feel about the book.
Yeah, it was just a lot of uncomfortable topics being brought up, so then I was just kind of well, it wasn't uncomfortable for me, I just knew it was uncomfortable for my classmates. And it was just a lot of, like, grotesque stuff and human rights violations, which is, like, just kind of mistreatments of slaves and just, like, very descriptive depictions of certain things they would do.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I could see that would be incredibly hard to read, because reading really transports you there. How have you had any discussions yet with your class about it?
Surprisingly, we haven't, despite having AP, like, English language teacher that's very into, like, Black Lives Movement and stuff like that. I'm surprised that I don't know if it's just because we don't have enough class time due to, like, a tight schedule, or if it's just no one wants to comment on it. Okay. We've had, like, maybe 2 emails, and that's about it, about the Black Lives Movement matter in our school.
All right. Well, thank you so much for bringing us a book that is definitely thought-provoking, and stay tuned next week for more fantastic book recommendations.